G'day, folks. Talk to Joel and Tommy from Western Sydney hardcore band Homesick. Man, it's like I've known these fellas for ages, eh? It's great, huh? Just with their love of music, what drives them today, some of the antics that they've got up to on tour, their album releases, with their most recent Terra Nullius, and some of the exciting stuff in the pipeline with some new material that they're working on. Can't wait. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs. Oh
yeah. Joel, Tommy, thanks for coming down, boys. Really appreciate it.
No worries.
So, Homesick, who's in the band? Where do you come from? Where do you represent? Or where do you live? And what instruments do you play? Who's on what?
Well, we're both on guitar.
Yep.
We also got TJ on bass, Matt on drums, and Pete on vocals, and we're all like from Western Sydney.
Yeah.
He's a better guitarist than me. I'm just the the guy who plays the background noise. But yeah, just what Tommy said, we're all like, there's five of us from Western Sydney, Darik Land, and yeah, that's what we represent. We're one of, I think, the only, well, I don't even know, like, Western Sydney hardcore kind of bands. So that's something that we are proud of, you know, that we come from the West.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Represent.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah.
Brother, I love that style of music. Like, I love hardcore, punk, metal. Awesome. All over it. Love it. Been immersed in it since I was a kid.
Hectic.
And can you guys explain to the viewers and the listeners just that style of music and what it is and how it comes out at Homesick and your style of it?
Good question. Yeah, how to describe it.
Do you want to take this one or you want me?
You feel free.
I'd probably say, like, hardcore comes from punk. So its roots, its origins is from in the punk scene, the punk music. And I guess out of it, hardcore and things like that has kind of... Punk had a way of always saying, like, you know, fuck authority, fuck establishment, there's all these problems, who cares? And I guess out of that, hardcore kind of said, well, how can we find solution to those problems? How can we take this music and weaponize it in a way to create, you know, self-change, social change, political change, and the people that, you know, go to the shows, like, how can, you know, we kind of transfer a message of, like, you know, of asking questions of hope and things like that.
Good message, yeah, that's important. But, like, you know, big difference between, like, Sex Pistols and, like, Minor Threat.
Exactly. Great, right? In the message that they were sending. So I guess hardcore kind of comes, it's got this really strong community of people that it's a very progressive style. Like, even though it's like rah, 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 aggressive music, out of that aggression is extremely progressive ideas within yourself, within society, within the political system. And yeah, it's kind of like, it's a place where music is the most important thing, but it's also the stuff that's being said. And I feel like that, out of other music scenes, that, because I listen to a whole bunch of different music and I've been to a whole bunch of different shows and communities, so is Tommy, that's what separates hardcore. It's like it's a message in the music always.
Spot on. And that's what I love, what it invokes. And especially, like, with myself, like, and some people don't get it because how harsh it can be to the eardrums to some people, but when I'm in a dark place and when I'm listening to hardcore and what it invokes, that those messages of hope and within society and how you can fit within that and have a crack, like, where it's pulled me out of dark places.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I've seen what it's done for a lot of people. Mm. That message of hope, no matter who it is or what they are, what stage they are in their life. And, mate, you're sending a great message out there.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
doing you. A solid job. So, youngsters out in Western Sydney growing up.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was fantastic, actually. As far as music went, you know, the scene when I was a kid was just, like, Penrith, you know, where I'm from, that was just a hub, you know. There was so many shows, you know, every week, you know, whether it was, yeah, like Thursday, you know, PCYC, or shows on the weekends, you know, and then I would put on my own as well, you know, at some of the places. And it was just awesome. There was a big alternative scene, but, you know, now it's sort of, it's so far removed from that. There's no sort of all ages kind of, you know, shows or anything like that. So, yeah, but definitely, yeah. Yeah, when I was a kid growing up, fantastic alternative scene, yeah.
It's awesome. And growing up, predominantly, what music did you guys start off getting into? And then where did it sort of lead to where it's like, bang, oh, punk, oh.
Pennywise. Straight up. That was like, I don't know if I would even be playing music were it not for that band. Like,
You, Joel? For me, I have an older brother, so he's a little bit older than me, and from a really young age, I'm really fortunate that I was given an amazing musical education. So, to elaborate on that, when I was like fucking 6 or 7 years old or 8 years, somewhere there, I had Ride the Lightning on cassette, right? And it was in his room. So, because, you know, older brother, stay out of my room, he'd close the door, right? When he would go out or do something, being a younger brother, that's my mission, is to go into his room and, like, look at his shit, right? Because it's, like, so cool, because you just idolize your older brother. And so he used to have a big CD rack, and I would go on his CD rack, and no word, like, there would be Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, Slayer, Pantera, Napalm Death, all Cannibal Corpse, you know, Butchered at Birth, Eaten Back to Life, all these records, right? And I was like, I'm in primary school.
Yep.
And so I'm taking these CDs, Rage Against the Machine. I had Rage Against the Machine's first record I had on tape. And I used to get the tape and put it in. And I would go in my room when he would be out. And I'd like put my headphones on and I'd listen to like Napalm Death when I'm like
That's crazy.
A kid. You're cool. So Ride the Lightning and all these amazing records. And, you know, I used to just sit there and listen to him, and then my mission was to get through the record, put it back in its CD, get in his room and put it back in the exact place before, because, you know, he'd pound me if he heard it or he'd get angry at me. Yeah. So, and then as well, on the other side of that, he had a really good hip-hop collection. So, like, I shouldn't have been listening to it, but NWA, Straight Outta Compton. I'm in primary school listening to, you know, Fuck the Police, you know, Express Yourself, all this shit, you know, all these kinds of music. So, I mean, I did my like year 4, year 5 presentation on music presentation on Metallica, Master of Puppets. I did another one on Slipknot, Iowa. You know what I mean? I'm in 2000, 2001. I'm in year 4, year 5, something. So from a young age, I was extremely fortunate to grow up into this, just exposed to all this music. And then from there,
you're getting all the juice early.
Oh,
it's a luxury, man.
It's a luxury, right?
I did not have anything like
that. Yeah, yeah. And it was good. But the way I got into punk specifically was there was obviously I got Killing With a Smile, right? So I was into NoFX. I heard Pennywise. I'd heard all these bands, but I didn't know any of that shit was in Australia. Like, I had no fucking idea. And then there was this band called Parkway Drive with Killing With a Smile. And I remember, or even before that, I guess, with their demo. I don't know, what is it? Don't Close Your Eyes EP? Yeah. And I'd heard some of this music, right? And I was online. I was like, fuck, this is an Australian band, you know, and it just blew my mind. And then I started going to local shows and started seeing local bands that were like better than some of the bands I was listening to an album, you know, and from America or wherever. And I was like, fuck, this is amazing shit. And then from there, you know, once you hear Killing With a Smile, it's like,
I know. I'm hearing you there. It's funny, like, when you remember, you got vivid memories, like, where you were talking about with your brother and, you know, pinching his music and going through all that. And that just popped in my mind, just thinking the first time I really listened to something heavy and I was just like gravitated towards it. It's when I was in the entrance cinemas and I was only in year five.
Yep.
And then watching, because we're watching Mortal Kombat.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, what a great movie.
And it's this scene with Johnny Cage taking on Scorpion.
Oh, Scorpion. Oh, yeah, I remember.
Then Fear Factory self-biased resistor starts kicking
That's
in.
That's right, yeah.
And it's got that real atmospheric sound.
Yep.
And then it's like, and then it kicks off and I'm like, what is this? Boom, done.
Heck yeah, I remember seeing that in the cinemas as well.
I think with my dad or something. Came out so long ago. But what was I going to say? Yeah, as far as my music, like, I literally did not listen to any punk or any metal or anything, you know, probably, yeah, before the age of 11. I was just, like, listening to R&B, probably. My best mate was Lebanese and stuff, and he would always just chuck that on and all his mates. And it wasn't really until, some of my friends started showing me bands like Pennywise, you know, and NOFX and, you know, Friends of Rom as well was a huge one for me. That was the first show I ever went to was Friends of Rom and Toe to Toe, which, it wasn't until that stuff. And then I just got right into it. Went through the phases, you know, for a while. I was just like, only punk, nothing, everything else sucks, you know, and then onto metal, you know, and then sort of, eventually kind of coming back around to the newer wave of the metalcore stuff, you know, the newer hardcore stuff. So yeah, I had nothing like Joel where you could just, you know, sort of pick cassettes and stuff off a rack. Yeah.
So did you guys all grow up with each other, like in Western Sydney?
No,
not really. I mean, I'd obviously seen some of these guys at shows throughout the years. And I'd seen them, but I mean, I didn't know them. I met Tommy through this, our singer Pete. I mean, I met really most of the band, except for technically Sutto, through Pete, the singer. And I just kind of met him, and then I actually didn't know. It's a pretty funny, cringy fanboy story about how I met Pete.
Get it out.
Oh, yeah. Well, so basically I was going to this hardcore shows and stuff, and I had some friends that were into it, but I didn't, you know, really know anyone else. I just had these guys that were into it that I knew. And anyway, long story short, I got this EP called this demo, Civil War demo, and it was one of the best fucking things I'd ever heard. Like, ever heard, right? From coming out of Sydney. The riffs, throwback to Metallica, Cro-Mags, all the stuff that I like, right?
Yeah, and bit of a mix.
Yeah. So I'd gotten this demo. I don't know how I found it, through online somehow. And I had something like 10,000 plus songs on my iTunes, right? That demo had the highest plays out of everything, right? I fucking worshipped it. I didn't know the dude. And one time I just started speaking to him. He did martial arts. I've done martial arts for a long time. We did the same martial art. We got chatting online. He's like, bro, come down to Penrith, hang out. You know, Pete's such a friendly guy. Mm. He'll just talk to anyone. He's just like, he's just such a friendly dude. And he was like, yeah, come hang out, you know, come just let's train, you know, we'll lift, we'll box, we'll do this stuff, whatever, and then we'll get some food. And I actually didn't know he sung for the band. So I went and hung out with this dude.
Kidding.
No, I knew he'd
like. Never heard this story.
No, I knew he. Yeah. I knew he had. He was in a band because I'd seen. But I didn't connect the dots. I'm pretty dopey, right? And then I'd like hung out with him, and then forget. We were like hanging out. First time, you know, it's the first time meeting a guy. You know, a lot of fun. Real friendly guy. I didn't know he was Indigenous. It's just when you meet Indigenous people, we're such a small minority within a minority. As soon as you meet them and they know, it's just this thing.
It is.
And it's hard to explain to people. You can't explain it to people. I'm sure, like, Tommy was, you know, Kyle, it's like the Polish, you know, someone you meet, someone that's Polish, have this connection. You know, you don't know them, but you're just like, boom. And so I knew that. And so it just brought this thing. I was like, oh, yeah. And we're pretty similar. We grew up same music. We had similar childhoods. We went through pretty similar things. same music. And then anyway, long story short, he had said, oh yeah, I was playing this show. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, yeah. What band are you playing? Then he's like, oh, I've seen a band, Civil War. And I acted super cool. Like I didn't give shit. I was just like, oh yeah, you know, that band, new today. It's not bad. You know?
Just playing it
pretty
off.
Good. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. Not bad. I've heard your demo. But then inside I was like, fuck, this is a dude. This is the dude that I can sing every one of his lyrics. And then from there, I guess, I don't know.
I met you through him as well, yeah.
Yeah, and then same thing. And then he introduced me to Tommy. Mm. And then I knew Tommy before I knew Pete in regards to he played in the band called Vegas in Ruins. And they were like considered the tech metalcore band of Sydney, right? They were like, he's a psycho on the guitar. Blah, 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 crazy. And they were
sort of mathcore.
Not mathcore, just, I don't know, just technical metalcore.
Very technical, nice.
You know, definitely, you know, with that strong hardcore element in it, but sort of dabbling in different metal styles, yeah.
Yeah, and super tech, and I had actually seen Vegas in Ruins a bunch of times. So I'd actually, like, seen Tommy, but I didn't know him until I met Pete, and I actually saw, was it Bring Me the Horizon? And I saw him, he opened for them, and I was standing right in front
really?
Of him. He's like tapping away. And it's super weird to talk about now because he's this guy when I was a, you know, teenager or whatever it was, whenever that was. And I'm looking at this dude who's playing in a band on stage in a roundhouse
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's tapping and doing this crazy shit. And I'm like sweeping and I'm like, whoa, man. And now I'm in a room in a band with him. It's super trippy how it all works.
Talking about how that all works. Mm. So where did it all link up and where did the concept of Homesick kick off? Like, were you just sitting around and started having a little jam or what was the process?
Well, Joel's probably the better one to answer this because I only joined the band last year, although I had been playing with them, you know, since the beginning. I'd be filling in for shows when the other guitarists couldn't make it. How was exactly created? I guess, you're the better man to answer.
Yeah, well, so it was pretty cash. Peter played in Civil War. I'd always talked about being in a band with him, right? And then he actually played in Civil War. Tommy was the guitarist in Civil War. And there was some talks there for a while about me playing guitar in Civil War, which at the time I acted real cool. Like, oh, right, it's fine. But inside I was like, holy shit, going to play in this band that, you know what I mean? And then anyway, that didn't end up happening. He played guitar, shredded as usual. And then Civil War unfortunately had broken up because of just like members, just revolving door. If someone would come in, they would play and then they would just leave straight, like really fast.
Yeah, right.
And that definitely takes a revolving door of members. Yeah, yeah.
And that takes a toll, like anything, right? Mm-hmm. And especially if you have a core, you have three guys. You have the singer, Pete, a guy called Mark, who plays, he's the singer, Rage, and then you have Tommy, right? And they're the guys and people leaving and stuff. And that takes a toll, and they ended up splitting up. And I guess it just happened. Pete, I'd kind of talked to him about it, about being in a band, and then Pete was like, he wanted to start something very casual, after being in such like a, you know, like very committed focused band.
Mm.
And then I said I wanted to play, but the prerequisite of me playing was my personality, for good and bad, is I don't do stuff being like, oh, I'm just going to do it. And just, it's very cash. My personality is whatever I'm doing, I'm going to do it.
Driven. Yep.
Bang,
balls to the wall, let's go.
Whatever. Like, yeah, you can use the word driven. You can use, I don't know what it is, obsessive. Maybe that's the thing.
Perseverance, huh?
Yeah, right. And it could be in anything. It's to do with any like fitness stuff. I keep fit all the time. It's something I've done since I've been a kid. Whatever I'm into, I'm going to be driven. Mm. And so I said that to Pete and I was like, look, I want to join a band, but I'm not going to join the band if it's
just
very cash. Yeah. Mm. If I'm going to play, it has to be focused and serious. He was cool with that. We found some people, you know, he knows everyone. So he's like, we got some people in a room. I wrote a song with Tommy. Tommy actually was the first guy to record our first song.
Oh, what?
The thing I recorded at your house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I recorded that. And then he's got like a home studio thing. And then I sent it out to everyone. And we had some practices. And we started writing from there on, and we just got, I don't know, in the, we just kept coming back, and we all get along in we all have very different personalities, but in a lot of ways we have very similar personalities. And because I guess what made it different was because we're not a group of randos in a room. We're actually friends. We're all friends before we started. So that is the...
That's a solid foundation.
That's the foundation. Absolutely. Is it's like friendship first. And obviously through the time in the band, sometimes, you know, we... You sometimes, you know, you look at it from a member, just why there's a friend side and then a friend side. But the foundation of our band has always been like, well, it's friends first, members second, you know. And that's...
That's good at keeping those boundaries.
Yeah,
so, you know, because obviously when you're not playing and you're out just having a talk of yarn, like compared to where it's ramping up serious for a show and just knowing what each person has to bring to the stage, you know, to get on the instruments and just grind it out, get it, get the message out and play live. Solid.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the reason why I joined the band. Yeah, like early last year it was, because I had been working on something before that, like a metalcore project, and, you know, worked on it for a couple of years, went nowhere, and I was, you know, I was pretty burnt out at that point, you know? I was like, you know what, I'm just not going to bother with bands anymore. I'm just going to try to maybe do some solo stuff just on my own. But yeah, when the opportunity came, I was like, okay, let's do it, because, you know, I was friends with everyone, especially Pete. I've known him since like 2004. We've been in like, most of each other's bands and stuff, you know, and then, and Joel, TJ, Matt, like, you know, all just, great dudes. And, you know, I was like, if I'm going to do another band, it's going to be this one for that friendship reason, you know?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Solid, Bella.
Yeah.
Homesick, the name. Where did that spring up?
Pennywise song.
Yeah.
So you can see what Toe said. It's a foundation in our band. Like our band, we all like SoCal punk.
Yep.
And that's like, we all like different styles. You know, I'm a massive, massive black metal fan. He's a big black metal fan. We like metalcore. We like all this stuff. But we all like SoCal punk. The whoa, you know what I mean?
Rise Against.
Bad Religion, you know what I mean? Strung Out, like all this kind of stuff. Oh, no I'm fun
strung
at all.
Out, man.
Pennywise. Good Riddance. Like they're all the bands that, we like. And Pete actually came up with a name, and he was like, oh, Homesick. And I was like, I was kind of sitting back and he said it. And then he was like, it's after a Pennywise song, so that's got to be the name. And I was like, fair, right? And it sounded cool. It wasn't like, you know, some like deafen the sky black or something. It was just like really basic. It was chill. And it was after a band that we all like.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, fucking.
And it's also, I guess, if you think about it, you know, it fits into the issues that I've spoken about as well. So it's like, you know, hits the nail right on the head.
100%. Yeah. That name suits your style of music.
Thank you.
To a T. Thanks. Big time. So, what I'm, you know, really interested about, me being a proud Wanneroo Kamilaroi man, is the Aboriginality side of things. Where it's the songs, the lyrics, the designs of the albums, and so forth. So, where the passion lies with that, and also, where are your mobs from?
Great question. So, when the band started, we didn't go into it thinking we have to talk about Indigenous issues. That was never the thought process. It happened organically. It was just one of those things where the bands that I love, you know, are political bands. Not all of them, but a lot of the bands I really love are like, if you're given a stage and given a microphone and given a platform, you better use it. That's always been my thought. And the thing that I always love about hardcore and metalcore and any of those things is there's just like duality. You got this thing where it's like on one record, they'll be talking about self-reflection, maybe mental health.
Which is also
very important, you know, mental health, how they see the world. And then on the other side of the record, they'll be just just straight out, you know, not mincing words, just political commentaries, you know what I mean, on in you know, the society, everything, right? Yeah. So that I find that hardcore and the music I love is kind of that balance. And so it really didn't happen that way. We didn't sit around going, oh, we should do this. The story basically goes, and something I've actually never said, really, I've never, like, my band doesn't really know. But obviously growing up, when I was growing up, you know, my mom is a strong, proud black woman. You know, I'm from the Yuin Nation, the Davis family, and the Darug Nation, you know, on the Cox side of the family. So that's where my mobs are from.
Yeah, because that's a part of the Eora Nation, yeah?
Well, Darug is, yeah. Yep, yep. And then Yuin is down south, so... mm-hmm. It's in the Bateman's Bay area. So that's where basically all my family are from.
It's Bruce Pascal's mom.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Dark Emu. And so...
shout out.
Yeah. Power. So I have, like, you know, I've got a big family down there, a very, very strong indigenous family down there, black and proud. And but basically, growing up, I was a teenager. I was a young kid. Every bit of an Aboriginal person I ever saw was always portrayed as bad in the media. When I was at school, people called me, you know, Abbo, Coon, you know, I don't want to even use the words, but like nigger, mudblood.
Mm.
People would find these stuff out and call me it, you know. So then being a kid, I don't know how to process that. I'm a teenager, like I don't know how to process that, even a young kid and teenager. That's and like, awful. Yeah.
Or would they say, oh... you know, how much Aboriginal have you got in you? Like, are you, you know, half caste or are you three quarters? And
shit like that.
Yeah, it's bullshit, you know. Yeah. Like, and for me, I've always said, because my mother's dark and my father's light skin, but you don't have to be black to be black.
No.
And just trying to justify that stuff to people, like,
well,
you 100% know what it's like.
Yeah, well, see, my mom was, like, you know, known where I went to school and stuff in that area. And so, yeah, people would obviously know, like, mom's Aboriginal and I have Aboriginal heritage on my mother's side. And, yeah, so, like, growing up, everything in the media, everything I ever saw was always negative. You know, lazy, drunks, alcoholics, fighting, like, and so, and then as a kid growing up, you're told that, you know, you're a coon, you're a bung, you're an abbo. And so, like, you laugh it off, but that internalized racism, that made me really push back. So people would say, oh, you know, Joel's, he's an Aboriginal guy, he's got Aboriginal in him. And I'd always be like, nah, bro, I do, but nah, because I was so ashamed.
It's like a stigma.
I was shamed, you know.
100% shamed.
And so I was like, I don't want to, you know, and even within my own family, not to get too deep, but I, you know, certain sides of my family, I saw a lot of the stereotypical stuff that you see, right? You know, and so as a kid, as a young kid and a teenager, that shit just made me just like, you know, fuck, you know, I don't want to be nervous. And that, my mom always pushed the culture, made me dance when I was younger, you know, did all the things. But, you know, I rebelled. And long story short, it really wasn't until later on, but the singer in the band, Pete, he was the guy, unknown to him, that sparked the flame. We got in a band, we started writing some music, and he just was like, he's just a real proud Wanneroo man. He's just very proud of his Aboriginal heritage.
Do you say Wanneroo?
He's
a part of my mob. Yeah, there you go.
And he's just very proud, and his mum's very proud, and I didn't ever say nothing about it, but I was just real quiet about it, and he obviously knew that Indigenous heritage, you know, he's seen photos of my family, blah, mum, and blah, blah, blah. And but I just didn't really talk about it anyway, and he was just so proud that it, for some reason it just made me, like, I was like, why is he's so proud. He's so strong in his proudness. Like, why am I like that? You know what I mean? And so then talking to him, like having a chat with him, seeing him, it kind of like made me feel less shame about it. And then he wrote this song that's on our first record, Resist Rebuild. And the lyrics were just like so hard.
Great lyrics.
So fucking hard. And I remember hearing them in the studio when we were recording that record. I'm looking at him, I'm like, fuck, you know, wow. And I don't know, like, I've never told him it, and because it's kind of awkward to say to your mate, like, thanks, bro, for making me proud to be black, right? It's kind of a weird thing to say, but essentially his example and his proudness and his strength in that made me be like, fuck yeah. So then I was like, fuck, why am I living with this thing around? I'm like, fuck that, I'm going to be just proud of who I am and my, because your heritage and makes your culture, your grandparent, your great-grandmother, your great-great-grandmother, your great-great, that is a direct line to you are right now. So I was like, fuck this, you know, I'm not gonna do that anymore. I'm just gonna be like, I just led with his example. And then to go into the lyric side, the lyrics that touch on Indigenous stuff are written between me and him.
Yep.
So he writes some of them, and then I write some of them. And we just share, because it's like all the other guys in the band aren't Indigenous.
Mm.
It's something that me and him have that we've experienced. So we, I guess that's so all the other political stuff that we talk about. You know, Tommy he involves himself in the writing of our new record that we're doing. He's involved in the lyrical writing because it's on different things. You know, other guys in TJ, he's involved in the lyrics as well. So it's like a collaborative effort, but on the Indigenous specific lyrics and stuff, that's me and him. Mm. We share.
Yeah, and I mean, absolutely, like, the entire, you know, band backs those issues.
Well, that's 100%. What I was going to ask.
You know, fully supports and backs those issues.
Yeah, and how do you guys feel, like, being non-Indigenous, like, you back those issues?
Absolutely, 100%.
What do you feel when you're up on the stage and, you know, you're looking at the song list in front of your feet or wherever you put it, and it's bang, like, what are you feeling being non-Indigenous? And it's like...
It's not an issue for me. Like, I don't feel any different, I mean to say. You know, because I fully support those issues, and you know, I support the message that's getting out there, and you know, however way these guys are feeling, you know, on stage, I'm right there with them, you know,
backing up the brothers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's it. High tide raises all canoes.
Yeah, that's right. That's it, yeah, man. And the artwork, you did ask that, and I forgot to because I was right, rambling. I was my cousin Josh, does the artwork. He does all our merch. And he does the art. He did the artwork for that record, like he did. He's like a graphic designer.
Love it.
And he is just an artistic motherfucker. And he's one of the only human beings on the face of the planet. He's actually going to watch this, so he's going to get a big fucking head. But he's one of the only human beings on the face of the planet that is close to me that I trust. Like, if someone said to me, if I showed him a pre-production of a song and someone
especially
said,
getting art out there and what it means, like Aboriginal art and with the stories behind it, because it can be touchy, and because you're representing yourself, the band, but the mob out there too.
Mm.
So when you're putting that out there, and I tell you what, you're saying... You know, getting a big head, but shout out to Josh, you're doing a solid work there.
He knows, I've told him as well. For me, that the Terry and Alia's artwork is like some of the best artwork I've seen, you know, in a very long time. Mm. It's fantastic.
He's just like, he's just a guy where, like if someone told me a song was shit, like if I wrote a song and said, oh, bro, that song's no good, I would be like, you know, but my cousin told me a song was shit, I take that because his opinion he's just one of those guys where it's like, he's my cousin, but I kind of like, I'm older than him.
I get such a big head.
Yeah, but like, I look up to him in an art way. Like he comes at everything with art, because he's a big film guy, he's a big music guy. So he comes at everything with a very artistic, you know, he paints.
Very articulate about it. Yeah.
And he's very, very intelligent. So, I approached him because I knew he would do a really good job. And I also didn't, you know, it's like an Indigenous dude doing the art for the record. So, but don't get too much of a big head, Josh.
Let's reel it back before Terra Nullius. So with your first album, Won't Let Go, what was the process like with writing the material, jamming, and then just collectively putting it together and getting it out there in the atmosphere?
It was a long process. This is my first band, essentially. I'd been in a band before when I was a kid, but we'd never gotten out of the garage. We'd written, we never played. We tried to get some shit going. It was just too hard. So Homesick's like my first band, And I've always had a thing where I've always wanted to write an album. So is the singer. And so we did a demo. He's like, bro, I've always wanted to do an album. I said, fuck, all right, we'll write an album. And we just worked. Like, the thing is, if there's one thing that, like, I'm going to say that's a benefit for our band, like, well, no, it's a, I don't even know what the word is, but, like, something that's unique about our, that I feel about us as individuals and as a collective is we really work hard. Like,
oh, yeah.
We, like, I mean, so this year and then, like, that record, Won't Let Go, legitimately, I think for over nearly 12 months, I spent every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, writing with the other guitarist that used to be in the band, Kelso. And he's an amazing guitarist and he's a top guy. For 1 year, like, I'm not kidding. We had a few weekends off here and there, but essentially that's what we did. I just locked ourselves in his room in the mountains and we just started writing shit. You know what I mean?
Well, you weren't mucking around when you were saying you just go at it.
No,
you know,
no.
Straight up 12 months, every weekend.
Yeah.
Locked in the room, pens out, let's write.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's still been going for the last year.
That's yeah. that's the thing, the blueprint with this band, and sometimes it's a bit of a shit thing about my character, definitely, and it can be a shit thing, and I'm definitely aware of it, that I've got a very, like...
Tommy, does it get on your nerves,
oh,
brother?
Oh, yeah.
You have no idea, man.
You have no
idea.
Right, yeah.
Open it up, Pandora's box.
But it's so true.
But it's fine. Like, yeah, we both get the shit sometimes, you know, because we'll just be trying to finish this song, but we both want to go, like, you know, different directions on a part, or, you know, have different ideas. And yeah, there's Joel can tell you there's been times I'm like, you know what, I quit. No, yeah, the session is finished, we're done, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you always get through it, you know, we're such good mates that it's yeah. It's just the process, of course. It's,
that's,
you know,
it. Just a part of the grind.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, and then that's the same thing that happened on the first one. We just hammered, and our friend Blake, All Black, he used to play guitar in Rage. He's a sound engineer. He just finished that music school. I forget what it's called. JCM. Yeah, I think that's the one. I think that's the one he finished. He was looking at recording bands. We hit him up. He gave us a price, and we were like, okay, cool, let's do it. And we just went up there. Yeah, nearly every second weekend for a few weeks, and we recorded it. And Dogfight Records, Trent, shout out to him. Yep. He put it out, and yeah, and that was it was pretty straightforward. We just got together, you know, hard. Nothing beats hard work.
Yeah,
you know.
And how did you record? Did you do it separately, like with your instruments, or what was that process?
Yeah, so we recorded everything. Where everything was, like, we did drums first, that was like 2 days, and then we did bass. I'm not 100% sure, I can't remember, but we did bass, that was like a day or two or three, and then we did guitars, both of them, like, and that took, like, I did mine in a day, in like 9.5-10 hours or some crazy shit. I just hammered,
smashed it.
Yeah, then Kelso, he did it in like, he did his in the same time, but he had to do a few little like leads because he, you know. So that was another day, and then yeah, so we just did everything individually across multiple weekends, and then Pete, he did it across a few weekends vocals. So he'd come up, we'd do 3 hours with him, get a song or two done, because, you know, the thing is with the voice is if I go out of tune, I just click. If he,
yeah, you can't, yeah, yeah. So you can't just replace, you know, broken string with vocals.
Once you're a vocalist,
once it gets shot,
yeah,
vocal cords out,
yeah,
you got a thing. Yep. It's like 3-4 hours in a room. And you're just yelling your guts out, and you're trying to, like, get out all this emotion. Because he's a very... One thing is, like, he's a very emotional guy.
And you can hear that in the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
everyone says
100%.
Yeah.
Like, and that's...
So,
you know what drives
to
me, too? Whether it's got to do... With whatever topics coming out of your songs, like, I know these legs aren't working like they used to, but, man, the inner ninja wants to come out,
yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Like, and that's the thing, right? And that's... That's the thing, is he's such a, like, he just conveys so much emotion, and he's very authentic. So when he's singing about something, you know, it's like he has this weird thing when he was recording vocals, he goes into like this weird space. He will be really quiet. He won't really talk to you. He'll be kind of standoffish. He'll kind of be like a little bit weird, and you'll be like, oh, he's in a bad mood or something. Nah, it's just because he goes in.
Is that what? Is that Pete's focus mode?
Yeah, so if he's singing a song about, you know, a resist, rebuild, right? Those lyrics, like, he's obviously, I don't know if he's actually doing it, but I feel that he's like, he's thinking about it, you know what I mean? Or if he's writing a song about mental health or writing a song about his personal experience, he's there. And he's just one of those guys that he's just going to yell his fucking ass off, and he's going to try to get out emotion as much as he can. So that took a few weekends because he was just yelling so hard that, you know, you do one session and that's it. So, we mixed it. Well, Blake mixed it. We got it mastered by the guy's in Weekend Nachos, this Power Vance band. He's a guy who does mastering. He mastered it. And then, yeah, that came out on Dogfight and was good, you know.
Righto. Album's out. You're like, shit. Got to lock in some local shows. Try and get a national tour in. What was that process like?
It was, we just took, and at first we just took whatever shows we could. We would just like, someone would ask us to play. We'd fucking, let's just play, you know. Whether it was in front of 200 people or like 5 people.
And which did happen.
Which it did happen. We played a ton of shows at first where legitimately, we played one show in particular where he was there for. You were there for.
I was filling in. Yeah.
We played a show. We played a show, right? So everyone, this is another thing that's like funny is, and I mean, if you're in a band, you'll get it. A lot of people, if you're not in a band, you'll see these photos and think, wow, man, these guys are playing in front of any band, right? Oh, these people, you know, all these people. Wow, it's amazing. Man, on the flip side of that, you'll play to people legitimately. We played a show to the singer's old girlfriend, her friend, 2 band members of the other band, and the sound guy.
And a guy playing pool.
And a guy playing pool in the background. Like, fucking hated our band. He was like, you guys fucking suck. So he's just playing pool in the background. And we have to play a 20-minute set. So the opposites are really cool. So we just did that. And then our friends in Vices, they took us out on a national tour. So, like, they put out a record, which I think is disgustingly underrated for Australian melodic hardcore. And they actually work with the guitarist. He's my boss now, Callum.
That's why I need to say good things.
Yeah. can get fired if I say anything about that. And they took us out, and we toured around Australia and we did that, and it was a cool experience. We played with an American band called Conveyor.
Nice.
It was very cool. It was very, very cool.
And what was the reception like from the crowd? Like, coming out for the first time, debut, and just, you know, it's fallen on some ears for the first time, you know?
It was cool. Well, the thing is, because Pete was played in Civil War and Persist before, we're kind of lucky. We had like a little bit of, I'm not going to say, the wrong word would be hype, but like a little bit of curiosity. People were like, ooh, the guy in Civil War's in a new band. So that helped us at first, because people were very like, oh, I want to check out the band. So it was cool. Like, people, you know, people like, I guess they, I don't know why, but they still, people like that record.
Solid record.
It was fun. It was us finding our feet sound wise. That's another thing that we kind of always do. Every record, it sounds different. Mm. There's like, we're just trying, you know, we're just honing it.
Yeah. And that's what I find, like, from the first album to what's out now. Currently, just where it's like how the songs are structured. Like, to me, listening to it from the first album, it's more, or, you know, maybe a little bit more traditionally, like along the hardcore lines. Like, yeah. I'm talking about the length of the songs, like when they're, you know, 2 minutes or 2 minutes plus and stuff like that.
Well, we're definitely shaking it up for the new one.
Yeah.
Nice. It's talking about, yeah, like changing up sounds. I mean, it's an evolution of it, I guess. It's just bringing in more influences. that we haven't before.
Yeah, you know? You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say the same thing. You know, it's good tapping in the... Because like you said, when you're young, you get listening to all these different types of music and what you're passionate about, if it's black metal, metalcore, you know, if it's whatever. Other, like a whole different genre and where that can sort of mix in and add to the evolution of what you guys are doing. And so after that tour, were you guys pretty much on a high? And what's some of the best memories that popped out after going on that tour? And don't hold back either.
I wasn't on that tour, but I'm sure...
What did you see, though? The conversation
will probably revolve around Sutter.
The highlights of going was, like, we stupidly enough to agreed the Vices, that band decided to hire a 21-seater. Because most of the time, bands go out in 8 to 12-seater bands. So if you got, like, say you got three bands on a tour... Not always, but usually we have like a 12-seater and two bands will share that, or everyone will get their own van. It all depends. But they decided, fuck it, we'll just get a 21-seater. And at the time, it sounded sick. But when you're doing like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-hour drives...
I told you it would have been terrible.
Right? And you know like those old people shuttle buses? Right? You know? Exactly that, right? And this thing was like old as fuck and... Yeah, it was cool. It was also winter, so it was fucking freezing at some points. And, you know, I'm 6'3", so my knees were like whole...
I was about to say, it'd be like...
Yeah. Yeah, I was like on this chair and like this, and you have a dude next to you. So legitimately, I would be sitting there for sometimes, you know, 10 hours like this, like on a plane, right? It was being on a plane.
And especially if people have got to get off and piss, you got like a whole busload. Yeah. Where compared to if it was like a 6 to 12, where
you got to have an iron bladder for tour. That's something I learned through. I mean, I've been playing in bands for like 20 years. Every tour, you know, it's just
Is it a bit like we're not stopping? Here's the empty bottle
have to,
champ.
Like you learn just to have little sips. You know, you don't like you know buy a Red Bull or whatever. Well, actually, I did have 10 Red Bulls once on a tour in the same day. That was a terrible decision.
You do weird shit because you're just so fucking bored.
Yeah.
You know, because you're driving. Because Australia's not like America or Europe. You know, those guys, you talk to bands from there, they drive 2 hours in another major city, 2-3 hours in another major city.
Yeah.
So they can play. You see the dates. They play like all the time. That's why bands get so big in those parts of the world because they're honing their craft, constantly playing. They make more money because they can constantly play in Australia. You know, from fucking Sydney to fucking Brisbane to play a show is like, what, 12 hours?
Oh, that plus.
Yeah, and you go into Adelaide.
Depends on the iron bladders, though, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like... Yeah, and that tour was just, at the time, some parts were just punishing.
You broke down, didn't I think?
Yeah, well, yeah. I actually, funny enough, I had been, I hadn't slept for like, I think like 2 days, right? 2 to 3 days. I'd had little micro sleeps where I'd kind of dozed off, but you're on a fucking bus that's like shaking, like, you know what I mean? And there's people next to you, and I hadn't probably slept, and I'm driving to Adelaide, and... I can't remember, we were in Adelaide and the rule was you'd have one person driving and you'd have one in the front seat and they were the spotter in regards to, they would just look, make sure no kangaroos safe, and watch the driver and chat to them, you know, to make sure they're not going to fall asleep.
That's it.
To make sure that they're okay, you know, bro, you need some water, or just have conversation, you know, talk about records or something.
Yeah.
And watching out for those big boomers that are jumping all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember I was just so tired. I'm like so tired. And the dude, Jake, he was driving and I couldn't keep my eyes open. Like it was like the first time everyone was asleep. It was quiet. I actually had a bit of leg space and I was in the front and I said to him, like, I was just like, dude, you got to pull over. We got to sleep. And he was like, no, I'm going to keep going. And I don't know why. I just got heaps emotional and I just got really red in the eyes. And I started like little tears were coming out because he wouldn't stop. I know. I hadn't slept. You know, I was
much sleep deprivation.
Yeah. And I was just tired. I was sweaty. I was stinky. I'd been playing, you know, and I just got heaps teary eyed and was just like, bro, you got to pull over, please. So he ended up like, funny enough, he just pulled over and then we all just slept in some middle of bumfuck nowhere near a toilet thing in the van. We're all just there to sleep. And what was meant to be a 60-minute sleep actually turned out to be like 3, 4, 5 hours where everyone was just like, oh. So, yeah, it was a cool tour.
Just a build-up.
Yeah.
Resist Records. Some rich Australian music history there.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. You know, toe-to-toe. Mind Snare, Parkway Drive.
Yeah, they got him. Carpathian as well.
That's it.
Isolation, still to this day, one of my favourite hardcore releases.
And then some of the international acts when you got Terror and Madball mixing up there too. Mm-hmm.
You got Polaris now.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, Polaris.
Yeah.
So, how did that come about with Resist?
Well, Graham, shout out to Graham, legend, such a great dude, he had heard our first record, and he, like, again, some reason, like, kind of liked it, I don't know, yeah, and then he kind of was like, yeah, you know, this is, like, a cool record and stuff, and then I think he spoke to Pete, I'm not exactly sure, he spoke to Pete and said to Pete that Pete was like, we're writing a new record, and then he said, I think this is how it went down. He had said, make sure you send it to me. I want to hear it. You know, if it's like last one, I want to put it out. So we were like, we liked it again. But that cool. Like, oh, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. But then inside, we're all, fuck.
You know, mind blown.
Yeah. Well, 16-year-old Joel, man, is like unbelievably, like, that is my hope and dream. When I was like 16, 17, or whenever it was, I saw Parkway Drive. I used to see the little Resist logo, and I thought to myself, like, wow, man, if I could ever get a band on that label, I made it. That is it. That is the pinnacle. So for me to be sitting here, and I'm sure it's the same for Tommy, to be on that label is like just...
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's fucking wild. So, yeah, and then he had like... And then we sent him the record. We did it with Jay Mars. Shout out to Jay as well. Jay did... he's done amazing bands. Like, he's done Verse. He's done some... he did Have Heart. He's done Counterparts.
Defeater.
He's a guitarist in Defeater. Yeah. He was the guitarist in Defeater, the main songwriting guy there for ages. He did Bane. He's done a crazy list. American Nightmare, like, crazy list of bands that guy has done. Like, the bands that, you know, we all like, oh, he's Yazzie, the Carrier. He's the fucking carrier, right? So, like, I remember one of the big amazing thing about recording with that dude was just asking him about my favorite records. I kind of must have annoyed him and pissed him off because I just constantly be like, oh, what about that record? And he would just tell me like, oh, we recorded that record doing this. And again, I tried to be cool and be like, oh yeah. But inside I was like, whoa, the carrier.
You picked up your influences.
Yeah, too. Right. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I've recorded that song.
Yeah, 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 right, yeah. And, but yeah, so then Graham heard the record. He knew we were doing it with Jay. He's obviously a big fan of Jay's work. And we sent it to him and Graham's like, yeah, cool. This is fucking cool. I like it. The thing is, what I love about Resist, and I guess it's different, is there's no, like, no contracts. People think there's, like, a contract. There's, like, you know, legit, all it is just a handshake with that dude. He's such, like, he's just got so much, he's such a chill dude. It's just, like,
there is. Just having that trust.
Yeah, I swear, it's crazy. Like, there is no, like, people have asked me before that, it, like, big fans of bands like Parkway and Polaris, they're like, oh man, you're on the same level, and blah. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're like, oh man, the contracts, and you know, is it like that? And I'm like, nah, dude, it's an email. And you go in, we met him, he was just like, yeah, I like your record, this is what we're going to do for it, this is how we're going to market it, this is where we're going to send it, this is blah, blah, you know, X, Y, Z. That's it. And it comes out on the day. It's very, very just super chill. And I think that's, with every, like, I'm 99% sure that's with every band, even Parkway and Polaris. It's all just handshake, very, like, built on that whole trust thing. So, yeah.
That's awesome. It sounds like family, too, you know?
Yeah.
You know, just having that trust and the camaraderie of, you know, and what hardcore metalcore and what that means to, you know, you guys and the greater community and having that trust and, you know, just relying that on a handshake. That's huge.
Yeah.
So stepping up to the plate, second album. And were you in this by then, Tommy?
For Terra Nullius? No, I wasn't. Yeah. Although I might have helped in some pre-pro.
Yeah, he was. Tommy, like you said, Tommy's kind of been the sixth member. He was always the joke that he was the sixth member. And now my cousin is the joke of he's the sixth member in the band. We've always had like Homesick are five piece, but we always seem to have six, right?
That's true, yeah.
And it's people that we trust. So Tommy was always the joke going, even when we first started, was Tommy was the sixth member. He was the guy where anyone went on holidays or couldn't play a show we were booked for, he would play. Because like he's a machine. He can play anything. Right, so...
Well, I heard you, you know, talking about you were running sweeps and stuff like that. Oh, yeah. That's pretty tech, dude. Yeah, if you run at that,
dude,
put that up.
Vegas and Ruins, right? What is the... What's the EP called?
Wolves.
Wolves. Yeah. Go check that EP out and you'll get what I mean. All that crazy shit.
No, well, but Marty did a lot too.
That's he wrote it, that's him. But, so he was the guy that was always in it, and Tommy was always the dude where, you know, we would, like... If I wrote it, again, he's like my cousin in regards to he's one of the only guys that I artistically trust where I'll send him something and say, what do you think? And if Tommy's like, do this, I'll be like, okay, fuck, I got to do that and I'll try it out. So he was always that guy of the band. Terra Nullius was same thing, legitimately 1 year of writing.
Same process.
Same fucking process.
Did it feel easier though this
season? No, it felt harder because... Because
you're on resist now, man. You're stepping up, Chance.
Well, yeah, exactly. And we'd also, like, the last record came out and we wanted to take a bigger jump and do it with, a well-known engineer and producer, you know, and a person. And Jay was that guy. And he's from Boston.
Boston Hardcore.
Yeah.
Killswitch Engage.
Oh, yeah, right.
I used to be a big fan. Yeah. Not anyone, just don't really listen to them, but yeah.
Alive or Just Breathing or whatever, that record.
Oh, yeah.
That's the shit. But yeah, so we same thing, same blueprint. I just met up with Kelso. We wrote every fucking weekend, constantly. There was like, again, a few weekends off, but it was just Saturday. My girlfriend, I got to give her props. She's so fucking patient because I was like, just not. See, like, you know what I mean? I just like, sorry, I gotta go write. So like, yeah, I didn't see her a lot. Just writing. And we have pre-pro stuff. Like we have all the, you know, we do it, we program the drums, you know. So it's like, we're pretty efficient at it now. And so we
100%,
did that.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And then we did that. And then, we booked Jay. We actually booked him and we'd only done half the record. I don't know why the fuck we did that. Probably my stupid idea. Yeah, probably. And Kelso's, I think, at the time. We booked Jay. We paid him a deposit to fly over here. He was coming over to do some records. We booked the studio. He booked the studio. And we rocked up. And yeah, we recorded it across 7 days in Newcastle at Wood River Studios. So shout out to them. They also play in a band called Tired Minds, which are really amazing. Check them out. They're fucking amazing. But yeah, so we did that with Jay, and that was really cool. That record, I guess, again, every record, I guess, that we've written, Homesick started off as like melodic hardcore. So basically, I was trying to pay homage to bands like, I was trying to pay respects and love to bands like Have Heart, American Nightmare, and Verse. And then as time goes on, and I love those bands and I love that style majorly. I'll always love it. But like, I really love metal and thrash metal and death metal and black metal, you know, apart from the whole white supremacist thing. They always seem to fuck around there. Yeah. Black metal, just get your shit in order. But yeah, so it's like.
Preach.
Yeah, right. And every single record, we're just trying to bring in new stuff. So that record was, I listened to tons and tons and tons of Metallica. So you can hear, that's why there's thrash riffs in there.
Yes.
There's a lot of thrash. Yes. I was just listening to... what is it? Edith, the last one?
Yeah, right?
That's like, just that's straight Metallica.
Yeah.
I actually like took a Metallica riff, changed it, and was like, yeah, fuck it.
I'm not even surprised.
Yeah, right? So I was listening to Master of Puppets, Injustice for All.
So, thanks, James.
Yeah,
thanks,
right? Yeah.
Side note, I've met Kirk Hammett.
Bigger
fan.
But yeah, so that's how it happened, and we wrote it and we recorded it, and it was an amazing experience because I got to hang out with Jay for 7 days and just ask him about, he did Verse, they did a record called Aggression, and that's like hands down, always going to be one of my favorites. And I just talked his ear off about it. And yeah, and it was like an amazing experience, man. It was so cool. It was so cool to work with a dude, you know, because like in every, there's levels in everything.
That's it.
And you could tell, not that like he is like, this is what he does. This is why he's got a name. Because work, he was just fucking so fast.
Because it would have elevated you guys too as a band too, yeah? Like working with someone like that and what you sort of have to bring to the table.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because, you know, he's used to working with like amazing, amazing bands. And so that's the standard that he's used to working with. So when I know personally when I went in, and I think the other guys were the same, you're like, oh, fuck, you know, like I better not. Like, I got to be, like, perform. You know what I mean? Like,
A-game's on. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%. And, like, he was such a down-to-earth, chill, funny guy, which was really cool. He was such a, like, chill dude. He, like, kind of made fun of us taking, like, he would, like, we would play a song. There's a song on the record, which, you know, it's like, it is what it is. You know, we were listening, Kelso at the time, myself, we listened to a lot of aggression. It's quite similar to us, the first song on Aggression and our third song on Terra Nullius. And Jay like said a funny thing. We were playing it for him. He's hearing it for the first time, and I remember he was like, "Oh yeah, I've already recorded that song yeah. on another record with another band," and kind of laughed because that's how much like how much we love this band. And so working with him was amazing. He's just so like with guitar tone, I'll give you a good example. With guitar tone, I was like, he's like, what tone do you want? And I was like, make it sound like Aggression from Verse. And he legit was like, cool. Walked in,
boom.
Came out, play something. Damp played, and he was like, how's that? And I was like, fuck.
Because what are you running? What guitar and string gauge and stuff like that?
I got a EC1000 there, LTD Deluxe. I'm just doing Ernie Ball Purples, which is, I think is like 11s, yeah, 48 on top and 11 on the bottom. I think I'm not the most gear.
And so what about you, Tony? What are you running?
What is it, 12 to 56, I think I run. Usually the heavy top, skinny bottom, Ionic Ball, I think. But yeah, as far as guitars, I got a ESP Horizon, which I use. Nice. And also another old LTD that I use. But yeah, the Horizon is great. It's got JB59s in it. I used to just run like, you know, obviously the active setup EMG 81s and stuff like that, but I've sort of I'm just preferring the passive pickups much more now.
Yeah, so. Solid pickups.
Yeah.
So what feels close to home for myself, like when I'm listening to Terra Nullius, especially listening to, like with the lyrics with Neuro, like when I listen to it and sort of take that in, how I feel about it, because my grandfather went through the Stolen Generation, like he lived on Wanneroo Country up in Singleton, come down to Sydney Redfern and had the door kicked in and all the kids taken. And just, I don't know if that's directly, like the lyrics, what you wrote are along those lines. But to me, what I take from it, it aligns that what's happened in the past for me. But, you know, that really invokes the emotional side of it. But, and yeah, emotional stuff. But what does that mean to you with those lyrics from Neuro and some of the other lyrics throughout that album as a whole? Because there's some solid stuff, not just all the aboriginality stuff, like everything from top to bottom. Like I sit there and listen it from, you know, from the first to the last song, and there's powerful stuff throughout.
Thanks. I think with Noora, I wrote the lyrics to that song, the most of them, and I gave it to Pete, and Pete like added in little bits and bobs, you know, that he felt would suit the song and his thing. I wrote that because I read a thing about Pemulwuy.
Boom, Eora Warrior.
Yeah, right. So I read a thing about him and I was like, I wanted to write a song vaguely based on that. So I just, you know, wrote some lyrics, read some shit, and I tried to paint a picture with what he must have felt at the time. And how that, like, his world just went from, like, you know, this amazing thing to just this fucking horrible thing, and how that guy's resistance to a system that was trying to just impose its will and crush him and his, you know, his people, his mob, and his, you know, just his identity, and just crush him, you know, and everything he's ever known that's been around for, you know, 80,000 plus years, you know. And so I wrote it vaguely about that, what it must have been like. And then Pete added in his, again, he like added in his, like, I told him what it was about. So then he, you know, he kind of had that mindset. And then he added his stuff. So yeah, we trying to paint a picture of that song. And then on the other songs, some of them, like Never Seated, you know, I wrote the lyrics to that. That was kind of a song where I had the lyrics and we hadn't really had the lyrics before we recorded it. Like, we'd kind of, like, we had a few things, and it was the night before I had these lyrics and said to Pete, Pete had some lyrics and I don't think he was happy with them. And I said, hey, I've got all these lyrics. What do you think of them? And he was like, dude, I fucking love them. He did his thing, because that's what he does. He's really good at, like,
taking... It's good that you can bounce off each other like that and just keep adding.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And that's, I think that's one of the big things about our band that's is really good, is because we are all very artistic people and we're all very, like, involved, you know, and in stuff.
Yeah, a lot of bouncing of ideas, you know.
Yeah. So, like, I'll have an idea and I'll say to Tommy, like, what do you think of this idea? And then Tommy will be like, bro, that idea is shit. Or he'll say, oh, it's fucking sick. And then we kind of...
Well, there is definitely a level of honesty.
Yeah.
Unbridled honesty.
Yeah, so we just go with it. And that's what happened. And Pete's the same. And so, yeah, so Never Seated was like, had some lyrics. He liked it. He did his thing. We shaped it around a song. You know, Song of Burdens is his commentary on domestic violence and what that's like and the impacts that it has on people and you know, women in particular, but also just humanity as a whole and how that just fucks up so much of society. It just fucks people up, you know what I mean? Because people, you know, like, people's trauma just carries on into everyday life.
That's it.
And it's, you know, and it's such a heavy duty topic.
And it's, you know, generational trauma.
Yeah.
You know, where it's coming from, Aboriginality, or if it's come through some other form of intergenerational trauma, and then what that brings to the next person and the next person.
Yeah.
And what, how it affects, but where you can either take it and build and where you can push out lyrics and the powerful messages that you push out, or where it, on the other side, where it can bury people and it's hard because there is that shame factor.
Absolutely,
and
then
hard to bring, you know, people out of those holes.
You know? I mean, any kind of, you know, trauma, you know, it's definitely, or the depression, you know, it's definitely, you have to take it and you make something, you know, positive with it, something productive, you know, whether, yeah, it's, you know, putting out songs, sending out a message, you know, so it's sort of, it's giving like those bad things a reason to exist. You know what I mean? That's like, that helps you overcome that kind of trauma, you know, and you create something positive out of it. Yeah.
Overcome just sort of terror then.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what kind of, you know, Pete, he did all the lyrics to that song. And he came at it with that angle. And, you know, because there's domestic violence comes in so many shapes and forms, mate, you know what I mean? And so
it's messy.
It's such a broad thing. And yeah, so he wrote, you know, those lyrics to match that. And it was heavy because, you know, being someone that, you know, has grown up and seen it and in different shapes and form, you know, it's like, fuck, wow. So I'm like, whoa, I hear it. And you know, what's like, there's different songs that we kind of collaborated on. And then there's songs that are sold like, you know, just his. And, you know, and I guess with the writing of that record lyrically, again, I like, for me, is like when bands get the emotional side and they also get the using the platform to speak out about injustices in whatever they are. So I love when bands do that. And I think that's what, I don't think we intentionally did it doing in both our records, but it's something that I guess we just do, you know, subconsciously.
Now passionate about,
Yeah. Because we got songs on that record that are legitimately like songs about hardcore depression that members have experienced at one time or another. You know, there's a song on there that's like Pete, I didn't even know about it until he did an interview. It's like basically a suicide letter that he said it in an interview. And I was like, I didn't know that, right? You know, it's fucking heavy duty shit.
That's full on, man.
You reread the, when I reread the lyrics, I'm like, wow. And you know, that's the kind of stuff that I guess, and then on the, you know, the next song, I think after that song is Noura. And then the next song after that is, you know, another Never Seated. Or I think that, I don't know the order. But I should, but I don't.
But it's good song placement, though.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and some of those, that lyric, that record is about grief. Heavy grief. Like, my grandmother, she had died around the time of writing that record and releasing it. And that was just like super traumatic for me because my nan was like, she was a matriarch of my family. She was such a strong woman. You know, she'd experienced fucking racism and disease and poverty. And like, she's just a fucking strong woman. And I had lived with her for 7 years in her house. And so, you know, my nan took on a second mum role. You know, my mom was like, my mom is unbelievably supportive, beautiful woman. But she, you know, she has her own life. She's doing her own thing. And I live with my nan. And so I was, you know, I just talked a lot about life with her. And she took on a mum role for me. And same with Pete. His grandfather had died, you know, a little bit before my nan. And, you know, he was, again, he is a, that's where Aboriginal comes from, his grandfather's side. and so, yeah, so then she had died and I had was living in her house by myself after she had died. I basically was there the night that she had fallen, hit her head and went into coma. I was the guy who took her to hospital. I was the last person to have a proper conversation with her. And I just watched her just deteriorate and her brain just like, just fucking shut out in front of me and she died. And then I basically had to go back home and live every day in this house with my nan was living in. You know what I mean? All the memories. So
that's so heavy, man. And sorry to hear that, brother.
No, that's all right.
Because like being in the house and like you said, all those memories triggering if it's sight or smell or touch or little things that just go click and you're like, Jesus.
Yeah, and exactly. And so I went back home, like, you know, she had died and that's why I was living in her house. And, you know, it was heavy, man, because her room was the same way it always was the night that she died. You know, and I had to walk, like, I just closed her room off. That door never opened. It just never, I just kept it closed because I just, it's too traumatic to go in there. You know, she's like, that's like a sec, like my mum kind of dying when she died in a way. So it was just heavy duty. And at the time, I guess the way that I got it out was like, you know, crying, working out and writing music. And so I wrote Edith. That's a song about her, you know. And that song also was, Pete kind of did his thing with it. And he was about his grandfather. So that record is very, like, a very emotional kind of weird period because you got Aboriginal stuff, political stuff about how we're pissed off at certain systems that are in control, you know, obviously, and then grief of, and that's all in just in 1 year, year and a half time period. And Pete was going through some heavy shit at the time as well. And he was going through some real shit at the time. I won't go into it, but it was some heavy duty shit and he was suffering. So that's why on that record, there's a big amount of just like emotion coming out on it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And when he recorded it, like he was just fucking yelling his ass off.
Yeah,
so it's just this, that record is like a, when I, it's not even like when I talk about it now, it kind of takes me back to that time and I'm like, fuck, you know, that was a very, like heavy duty kind of time, you know what I mean?
And it's then
my
dark.
And at the time, like my job, I was at a job, I was getting bullied at my job. I worked for an Indigenous unit in the school system. I won't name which type of school system. And you know, we had 16 Indigenous people, and we got a new manager, a non-Indigenous man, like up manager. And we went from 16 staff down to 3 in less than 6 months.
What?
Funding had been cut. I was getting bullied by it was just fucked up, right? And I was an AEO, Aboriginal Education Officer, in Mount Druitt. It was my job. And it was just a fucking very...
So all that's going on as well.
That's all going on while we're trying to write a record.
Far
you out. Know, singer's got some heavy duty shit going on. I'm dealing with grief. He's dealing with grief. You know, got this job thing. This shit's going on. Fucking family issues are going on. You know, just crazy shit, bro. So that record, I guess, was just us
pouring it.
As Tommy said, creating this dark shit and just putting it into something positive. And that's what the power of music is. Just, you get it.
Oh, man. Helps you to overcome it. It does. Yeah, 100%. Like what I was saying before, like how that music, and when you listen to it, and when, like, some people don't get it because of the, because they just hear the, like, they don't listen to what the message is. They just
custom maybe,
But man, like, that stuff does really invoke powerful emotional messages and can, you know, get you out of a dark place. And
absolutely,
and that rawness. Just how you guys have 100% compartmentalized that, and where it's in each song, and where it explodes out, and you know, man, that must mean a lot to you guys. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. No, at the time, it was just good to focus my obsessive personality on something
going to the other music
than just. Fucking, like, that was my thing. That was the way I coped. Was I would go to yourself. I would go to the gym. Mm. I would train for hours a day plus working, and I would come home and I'd just write.
Mm.
Or I would write lyrics. Or I would just, it was the way. And every weekend, it was like my thing I looked forward to. Getting in a room with my close mate, Kelso, and just writing.
Mm.
You know, it's, yeah.
And how was it? At the end of the process, once that was out, and same again, tour's on, and you've got all these emotions, and then when the lights are coming on, hitting the stage for the first time, getting this stuff out, how was that?
It was, I guess, like with any release, and Tommy can say, with any release at the time when you're doing it, you're kind of not, it's like weird, you're like, you're writing these songs and you're getting shit in order, but you don't really think, like, it's weird when it finally comes out.
Yeah.
You press play and you're like, fuck, this shit that I'm listening to was written over a year ago. I was in my boxes, in my room, fucking in my underwear, writing some riffs. You're like
detached from it.
You're so detached. It's weird. You're like attached, but you're so detached. You're like so detached from it because you're just like,
also because you listen to it like 1,000 times, rewrite a song, you know, however many. Yeah. And by that, it's sort of, you know, I guess the feelings you had when you first wrote it, you know, it's like, they're not, you're not like, you're not there really. Mm. So it's sort of, but then playing it live, what's that's real? When the feelings come back.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like an explosion because it's like a weird thing. The day that it comes out, like, because Tommy said, before your record comes out, you have heard that record. Well, I'm not kidding. Like, at least 100 times. You have listened to it. You have written it. You've
analyzed it. Everything.
Yeah, you have heard it in the studio because it's played back. You do a listening thing. You're doing the mixes with the engineer. He's sending you mixes. Because you got to listen to the song a million times. Pick out. Mm. Ooh, we hit a bung note here. Ooh, there's feet. You know, whatever.
Or maybe lift up an instrument.
Lift his vocals here. True. Put this, so you have heard it so much that you totally don't even analyze it in an emotional way. You're just like, you're kind of just like. You're like, I fucking hate this shit. I don't even want this.
Done it a thousand times.
It gets like that sometimes, because you're like, we're trying to write a song, please end. You know, like, we just want to be done with it. But then, you know, after you give it some time, you listen back, you know, like, okay, wow, we've done something really great here. That's, you know, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And that tour, what with Terra Nullius, like, how was that? You weren't bloody cramped up in a 50-seater bus again or what?
No, no. So we on that record, we got to play with some amazing bands. We got to play an open for like Turnstile and Stick to Your Guns, and we got a tour with Modern Life is War from Iowa, which are an amazing band. They're on my favorite record label in the world, Deathwish. And so touring with them was cool. Unfortunately, we got sick. Members in the band got like just gastro and all that stuff, so we couldn't continue, which was a real big bummer. But the opportunity we got to play with them and, you know, be on the road with them and shit was like, was just super, super, super cool. And then, yeah, and then we did Terra Nullius, that tour, and that was cool, you know. It's cool when you go out and, you know, again, like, when we're playing an alternative heavy music, you know, we're not going to be playing in front of thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Like, it's just a thing that you accept, you know. Even the big band, like, if you kind of think, like, even the bigger bands that we're like, wow, big band, you know, they don't play in front of the crowds that hip-hop artists or, you know. So you, it's just something that you're not doing it for that. You're just doing it because you want to do it. And
passionate.
Yeah, and it's super cool because when you go out and you meet people out in different parts of the country that come up and say some shit to you that is really heavy duty, you know, and you makes it all worth, because, you know, you get someone come up to you and say, man, you know,
yeah, they're like so passionate about it, you know,
yeah,
like, you know, just love you guys, you know,
yeah,
this means so much to me and everything, yeah, that makes it all worth it,
yeah,
yeah. Or they'll say shit like, you know, like, this song, the lyrics in that, reading that got me through, you know, my person in my life died, or I've had suffered depression, I wanted to kill myself, or whatever it is, and they'll come up to you and say that, and it's like a moment of like, you, because, you know, I think about bands like that. Tommy does, you know. And you're like, 100%. Oh, yeah, I love this band. Fuck this thing. Wow, amazing. And so you think of that. And then when there's other people that come to you and say the same things that you would say to another band, it's so humbling, because it's special, you're like, I'm just a dumb fucking idiot from Western Sydney who just
writes. Come on, bro.
Yeah, no, it's, but you know what I mean? Too modest. Like, you write music. Yeah. It's nothing special, you know, you're just writing music, whatever, and then someone else from your artwork or something that you've written comes up to you and finds some kind of, I don't know, inspiration from it, you're like, fuck, that's super fucking cool. Or you might, I don't know. So that it was a really cool vibe to tour around the country, and yeah, it was cool. Like, it was our first proper tour ourselves. Like, we went out with Modern Life is War, so when we played with them, we were playing in front of, like, sold out venues, you know, tons of people going crazy. So then our next tour was by ourselves. So it was kind of a nice thing to see where we're at as a band, to scope where we're at in the scheme of things, where, you know, how people have received our record, or, you know. And
pretty well, brother.
Yeah, like, it was a cool thing. And it was great to tour with Tommy, because he had joined the band, but that was our first tour together.
Yeah.
So, and with both of you guys, when you are out there touring, what's some of the pinch yourself moments that you've had, like, as a crew, like, with both of yous and the rest of the band going around?
I think just the fact of being able to tour, you know, and play with your good mates, and, you know, play this music you love. I mean, that's like sort of goes throughout the, you know, the whole experience. Yeah.
And what's the growth like now? Like, when you're talking, like, not just with yourselves, but throughout, like, if it's Western Sydney, Sydney as a whole, New South Wales, nationally, just with all the other punk, hardcore, metal, what's, like, from your perspective, what's that scene like?
I would say the alternative music scene worldwide in Australia is as big as it's ever been.
Yeah.
You know, you got bands like, you know, Parkway Drive, bands like Polaris, you got bands like, you know, like other bands like Northlane, you know, blah, 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 et cetera.
Yeah,
you've got
yeah,
these
yeah.
enormous bands that are just killing it overseas. They're killing it, you know, internationally and domestically. And, you know, you got bands like Architects, you got like all these massive bands in the world that are coming out now, and they are touring Australia, and the internet, you know, the access to the internet.
Oh, social media.
Yeah, right. That's social huge. Media, Spotify, blah, 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 all the stuff. And so I think like heavy music right now in Australia, and for the last few, for a few years ago, it kind of seemed like it dropped a tiny bit, but I would say recently in the last few years of being in, you know, Homesick's only just been a band for just on 5 years, something so just, I think. In that 5 year window, I've seen a massive growth, and that's come because of other record labels putting on festivals, you know, and you know, things like the Northlanes and the Unified
Download Festival,
those bands on those
Invasion Fest,
Invasion Fest, and blah, like all.
I wish I was there for that. To be honest,
it was cool. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. And so it's very big now, as far as like it's the best place that I've seen it. I would say two times now, and when Parkway's Killing with a Smile came out, that era, they are, you know, because that era was fucking crazy. That era was insane. You know, there were so many bands, so many shows, so many venues.
Oh, it was nuts.
It was crazy.
When stuff was going, like, exploding out your way out west.
Yeah.
And then, like, when some of the bands, Parkway and some of the other backup bands were playing, like, at the Roundhouse, and it would be absolutely chockers.
Yeah.
You know? It's nuts. And
I saw them rise up from the very... Oh. I think I saw them the first time in, like, was it maybe 2003? That was with like supporting In Flames and Chimera, I think.
Yeah, right.
At Manning Bar. But then, I watched them rise up, you know, playing Embassy in Penrith, you know, small venue that I also used to book shows at and stuff, and the PCYC, you know, and then it's just...
It's crazy.
It's insane, like, where it went after that, you know?
Yeah.
It just took off, like, mental. But, like, I do agree, it is so huge now, but I have a big problem with just like how can I put it? There's barely anywhere to play. Like there's the amount of venues. I mean, especially there's like virtually no all ages shows. Is what I feel has really hurt the scene. You know, just venues having to shut down and stuff like that. It just being so expensive.
Yeah, because that was big out your way.
Yeah, it was massive. Like I said, Penrith was just this huge hub of music and other areas in Western Sydney.
Yeah, even up my way, like up on the Central Coast. Like I remember watching Parkway playing at the Oasis Youth Centre.
Mm,
you know, where you got Every Time I Die bleeding through. They've all played there.
Yep.
And that was all ages.
Exactly.
And now that's just
so
gone.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like there's no... I don't know. It's so different to back in the day because, you know, like I'd play so many all ages shows and sort of, you know, all these kids would come see them and then they start their own bands and it's sort of, you know, and then they'd play and it just built this community. Whereas now it's just like, it's only the big shows, you know, that maybe like license all ages and something. There's no PCYC, no youth centers, you know, putting on shows, nothing. It's, I actually wonder, like, where are these kids going for music? Because youth is such an important part of hardcore. I mean, it is hardcore, essentially, you know? I'd really like to see that change, you know?
And what do you think needs to change? Like, if it was, I'm just trying to think. Like, because it's pretty hard to bring it back up again. Yeah. Like, what do you think would be the moves to sort of get that happening in regional areas around Australia?
Well, yeah, that's something we've actually discussed before as well with, like, you know, regional areas and bringing maybe, shows out there. But, yeah, again, it's a big cost, you know, and organising and everything like that. Especially, you know, for smaller bands.
I think yeah, I think what it would take would be promoters, booking agents, and et cetera, that are, you know, do have the money and they do That's have right. the resources
Funding,
actually
yeah.
actively going out to places and booking bands that are going to put, you know, asses in the seats kind of thing, and they will get it, you know, like a bit like a booking printer coming out and going, I'm going to book Penrith PCYC. I'm just going to book that for a big show because that's going to get people out there or wherever, right? Because, like, I understand, like, you know, it's super expensive. They need to make money. They got costs they got to cover. You know, you got to pay band, international bands. That shit ain't cheap. Visas.
Nah, man. Yeah.
Food. You got visas. You got van. Yeah. You got accommodation. And you got daily food allowance that you give them. You know, that's big, like, dollars. Imagine the dollars. Especially in a place like Australia where you can only play five places.
That's true. You know, it's huge, like Brisbane, Sydney.
It is hard to in Australia. Yeah,
that's why everyone I see, like, and rightfully so, people from Perth, they're always on there going, oh, no one bringing the internationals to Perth. It costs over $3,000 to get a band to fucking Perth to play one show. So if you got to think about it, right?
Because you got to make returns on that, man.
Yeah, so to fly a band over there, that's $3,000. So you got to get them there to $3,000. Then you got to get them a van. You got to hire accommodation. And you got to pay them food money while they're there. Imagine the money to play one show. But if you're in Europe or you're in America, you know, you see the dates. There's like 25, 30 dates. They can just go bop, 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 bop. So I think getting back to the question, I think what it's going to take is, it's a real grey, hard one to answer, but I think it's going to take more venues opening up, and I think it's going to take promoters actively trying to get, you know, people out in those areas, and other people, like local people, just putting on their own shows. Like, there's a place in Doonside, and Doonside House Collective, I think they call themselves, and amazing, you know, amazing group of people, and they basically, you know, kind of said, and they were like, you know, there's no shows out here, fuck it, we'll just hold shows in the back of a house, put cement down, and they
do. Gorilla style, man.
Put cement down in Doonside. You know, Doonside is not a fucking, that's a rough area, right? Especially where it's located. That is, like, I remember when I first went to a show there, I was like, bro, because it's just around the corner from my house, I'm like, I'm in the fucking wood, right? Like, I don't know how hardcore and punk is going to go down, right? It's going to be a lot of Nordica jumping the fence. Right? Like, TN, but it's not. But yeah, and they're just people that got together and were like, we want shows out here. We love live music. We love bands. We got a backyard. There's cement. Oh, there's a cement slab.
Let's do it.
Boom. Sound. Boom.
Short break. Short break. Boom.
Oh, Tommy, you got the thing.
Boom. You're all over it, brother. It's all good.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. It's a real tough one to navigate. I don't know the answer. I think lack of venues is a big one.
Yeah.
You know, Blackwire.
Yeah.
Blackwire was an amazing venue for bands that aren't big, that aren't at those. Because, like, you got to, like, right now, to be a band, unless, you know, you got a place like Red Rattler, and you got, used to be Baldface Stag, which is now Crowbar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
like a 400. Crowbar. Like, Red Rattler is like 200, 250 room. And then you got, was Baldface Stag, now Crowbar. You know, that's like what? It was 350, 400, 500, something like that. I don't know. So, and then if you're not a band at that level, to book that venue is going to cost you a mozzo of money, but you're not going to be able to put that many people there to cover the cost. No,
yeah.
So you need a venue that's...
Because you want to play, you want to... You know, get the energy and the music and everything out there. But at the end of the day, like, you got a roof over your head.
Yeah, you know.
And that you want to keep providing, you know, if it's for yourself or your family, missus or whatever it may be. So you'd be thinking about that stuff too, yeah?
100%, because, like, you know, like, we don't get paid as a job to do this. Like, we get money. We're not going to say we don't. I mean, we charge money to play most of the time, play live, right? We got expenses, you know, we make money off merch and et cetera. But it's like a small business. It just constantly recycles in, and any band will say the same. It's just a constant recycling of, like, you get money, it goes into the next merch, it goes into the recording. Yeah. So you've got to make it worth, it's got to be worthwhile, because, you know, music is made to be heard. You know what I mean? It's made to be played, especially this music. Hardcore is always about live setting.
That's it. Getting out there, getting on stage.
Yeah, it's, and that's the thing. That's what I think, to coming back to the original question, one of the first ones about hardcore was, what really separates hardcore from other music is like, there in other music, there's this barrier between band, people. There's like this.
You feel more like you're talking about more connection within that style of music. Yeah,
because, you know, like, let's just take like other music genre. You got like the performer, the artist, and then you got like the crowd, and they're very separate. You got the barrier, you got security, you know, and everyone, the big upper stage, like everyone's like, whoa, you know, we're in hardcore. Nah, that shit ain't there. It's band, people, same level, everyone's same, get fucking in each other's face, you know what I mean? Like, you go to a hardcore, you know, you go to another show, people don't get up on stage. People don't take the mic off the singer. People don't stage dive on the singer. You know what I mean?
No. It's not taking them out. It's just getting amongst that emotion and that feeling and rawness being within a live audience and, you know, taking in that music, but taking in the atmosphere of the crowd and just, enjoy, you know, because I know what it feels like going to those shows and what it invokes and the emotions and just you want to get up and...
Yeah, there's nothing like... a good hardcore show.
That's right.
It's its own thing, man. Like,
yeah.
Whenever sort of somebody asks me about it, doesn't really listen to that kind of music, you just have to experience it, you know?
Yeah.
And with experiences, so because you got plenty of them now, doing these live shows, from each of yours, favourite song to play live?
That's a loaded question. That's a hard one. I think, okay, for me, I would probably say favorite song would have to be to play live. Would probably be from just me playing it and what it brings out in me and playing it and just like the vibe of us as a collective on stage would probably be Resist Rebuild. That song is like that song when it goes from the first track to the next one, it's just that guitar going da 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 da, like, and then Pete is doing the Aboriginal war cry, he's doing it, and then he starts, and then he kicks in with the other guitar, and we kick in, and he starts shaking a leg and dancing.
Love it,
man. It's that one song when we do it is like no matter.
It's jam packed with stuff. Like it's probably I would give the same answer.
Yeah.
Because it just, you got all this stuff in it, you know, and it just blows up.
It's one of those ones where, you know, you, every time we get to that one section of the song, I'm just like, I could be tired from work or tired from whatever the fuck I'm doing and be playing a show. I'm like, man, I'm tired because it happened. You know what I mean? I'm playing the thing. And I get to that one bit and I'm just like, let's go.
Oos.
Yeah, let's go. Right. And that, probably that song, I'd say.
I think another one for me, though, I don't think anybody else will agree with me, would be Burdens.
Oh,
like when that chorus hits, man, live every time, I'm just like, oh, man, it brings something out. I don't know.
And the reactions from the crowds too, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, even Free.
Yeah, that's
you know, cool. that's a great opener. I always get like, really pumped with that one.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of hard. I'd say Resist Rebuild is kind of everyone in the band's would favorite. Agree,
yeah,
would definitely agree. But I think we all have difference of like, I really like Noora because like that gets people. People always.
I love it.
Yeah.
They're always G'd up. When we play a song, there's always people taking a mic. There's always people like up the front yelling. Yeah. So that song's cool to play because you're watching and you're like, oh, people are into this.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the best feeling, you know, when like, yeah, you look down into the crowd and it's just like, just going mental, you know, and screaming the words right back at you, or you know, you go up and scream in someone's face, you know.
That'd feel special.
Yeah, it's it's awesome.
Favorite place to play, favorite gig,
ever or now?
Oh, give us both.
Favorite place, oof. Another loaded question. I'm going to say favorite place to play ever, like, would probably be, would have been, maybe Blackwire.
It's on
the floor.
Good choice, yeah.
It's very personal. It's room. Don't play it in summer. It's bad. Stinks. Sweaty. It's hot as fuck.
Can't breathe.
Yeah, right. Can't breathe. But apart from that, probably that venue. And I think probably favorite overall would have probably been one or two. I would say Hardcore 2018, I think. The Resist one in the factory floor.
Nice.
Not factory floor. Factory floor. Or we played the same venue with Modern Life is War. Those two would probably be... Blackwire would be my favorite just because it's super, intimate. But I'd say those two would probably be my favorite. They're fucking... We got amazing responses. Wild at those shows.
What about you, Rella?
Oh, man. I'm trying to... Blackwire is a great choice. I also love Red Rattler. That was a great venue as well. But, going back, to the really early days, obviously... Embassy Hotel, I loved as well. It's kind of hard to pick one. Probably my favorite show ever would have probably been that the Prom Queen reunion one.
Oh, I remember that. At Roundhouse.
Yeah, that was nuts. Before that show, I'd never played anything like it because it was sold out Roundhouse. I don't know, it was 3,000 people more with Bring Me and Red Shore and everything and Ghost Inside. So that was just mental. That's definitely up there. But even recently, Invasion Fest was amazing as well.
Good lineup, solid lineup.
And great show. Like it was just packed out and everybody getting really into it. And that's a great venue as well at the Metro there.
Yeah, awesome. Craziest or funniest moment from the crowd, the pit, going nuts. You'd have some loose cannons in there, especially with the windmills and whatnot going.
Yeah. Just when you look out and you see one of your mates that's drunk.
Yeah.
He's fucking drunk. And they're just in there and they do the woos. They're like good. Yeah, you're just right. Playing, and then you just look out.
Cheers.
You'll see just one of your mates or someone that you know that's not usually a loose cannon, but they're getting loose that night, and then they're just like just dancing, singing along, and just like and like that's always good. That's always fun. Like seeing that shit is, you see it and you kind of laugh. Like you're like, it's always good. And
I'd
probably say one was seeing, again, going back to my cousin, he's such a quiet, reserved guy, and we had played Sydney, and I was like, what the fuck? We're playing a song, and he comes on our tours. He's the merch guy.
Yeah, that's right, yep.
He's basically sixth member of the band, and he's a quiet guy, super quiet, right, unless you know him. And we're playing a song, and we played Resist Rebuild, and it goes into that one guitar bit. And then I just see him run up the front, jump on a dude and start finger pointing and there's a photo of it, Pete's giving him the mic.
That's sick.
That was a moment where I was like, what? What are you, like, that's weird seeing him get so
emotional.
So that was cool.
Yeah,
right? I didn't even think, I just laughed. It's like me for the next 5 minutes just laughing, right? Not being able to play, like, what?
I'm trying to think of what I've seen so much crazy shit. In old bands, there was this deathcore band called Evolver that I was in. I think there was one tour with, I think there was a naked guy moshing with a fucking chair.
That's wild, man.
Yeah. Or a singer would break the fucking stage, and then the kids would take it, and one of them would be like crowd surfing on it. They'd be running around with it. Yeah, I think I have video footage of this shit somewhere. It's absolutely hilarious, but I don't know. Yeah, too much stuff to think. You know how crazy like hardcore shows can get.
Oh, it's just mental.
Man. Yeah.
So, what is on the horizon for Homesick? New material? Is there anything in the bag? Any dates for anything? Are you still allowed to... give a bit of a sneak preview or something. Come on. Give us the juice.
I would say, Yeah, so we're writing our next record, like our third one. It's cool. We've got all, like, we've done a lot of pre-pro for it.
Nice.
And it's very, it's kind of a little bit scary in a way because it is, to basically on the last two records, like on the last two records, I guess, I personally kind of, I knew Homesick had like a sound, I guess, and it kind of had like a formula, if that makes sense. Like we had a formula that we kind of stuck to, and we had like a blueprint. And I was like, if you can hear the last one, we kind of brought in new influences, like the thrash metal. We brought in thrash metal.
Right? Yeah.
And that was the thing that, but it was always like little drips and drabs.
Part of growth.
Yeah, right. And I think going into this next one, it was a very conscious thing for myself. I was like, I want to write the shit that I actually listen to and I actually draw inspiration from. And I don't want to like just fit to the Homesick formula, like
Terry Nye's part two.
Yeah, I don't want to be like Terry Nye's part two. I don't want to just put out a melodic hardcore record with drips and drabs because that's what everyone expects us to do.
Mm.
I was like, nah. And I listen to that style, but I listen to a lot of other stuff. So I wanted to really heavily bring that in. And so we've been just experimenting with that, trying this unique blend of
different
sounds, yeah. But sort of same formula, still on the grind, still just always, going nuts.
Still grinding.
We definitely grind it. Yeah, I mean, like, well, like grinding as in writing every weekend. Yeah, that's been going on for like, quite a while. I don't know, since mid last year.
Yeah. So we're still doing it, and I guess we're taking a little bit longer this time with it because you always want the next record to be
better.
Yeah.
Than the last one, and like, you know, more epic, more this, always one extreme.
Just your honing, expectations grow higher, you know.
I get it.
And writing with Tommy is different as well. So it's like a new dude we're writing with, and a new dude who approaches songwriting and his influences.
Mm.
So he's bringing them into our sound, and then I'm bringing the influences I like, and we're just smashing them together and seeing what kind of happens.
That's great.
Yeah,
because he, you know, he comes, he's very inspired by metalcore and specific sound of metalcore, and I like that sound as well a lot. And I'm very influenced by, and it crosses, but I'm very influenced, like I said, by black metal, black gaze, and that's the Euro sound. Like that's something that I've
Converge,
right? Everyone knows I'm a massive Converge fan, so like. These kinds of things, and I'm in the first Misery Signals record, right? That album is all dark.
Yeah, right.
Those fucking
records. It goes back.
Yeah, right. They're amazing. So that's, without getting too like specific, shit is essentially what we've put together. And I think it's sounding pretty fucking cool and very unique. Like I feel when this next record comes out, people will be like, oh. What the fuck?
It's a lot of different stuff on there.
And it's gotten a bit more tech. It's weird. It's gotten more simpler, but then it's got a lot more tech. Yeah.
Yep.
There's a lot more.
You have like, you know, your black metal converge sounding stuff, more classic metalcore sounding stuff, hardcore punk stuff. There's a lot of influences on there.
That's good.
Yeah.
And just a massive mix.
And I think that's what we're trying to do was, I guess when we first kind of sat down to write, it was something that we kind of discussed in a way. We were just kind of like, these are our influences. Let's not fit the, like, let's just not be like, oh, we can't do that because that doesn't fit the Homesick formula.
Well, it's actually funny because when I first joined, Joel was like, I have this idea, you know, of mixing our current sound with these bands. Like, you know, with black metal, I'm like, I don't remember what song I thought of, maybe Dear Brother or something. I'm like, what? You know, like, how are you going to have, like, nice hooky melodic chorus and then you're just going to go...
Yeah.
So it took me a couple of tries to kind of wrap my head around it, a couple of attempts, but then I just sort of, like, got it. And I got
what I was trying
to... Yeah. It was not immediately obvious that I mean mixing melodic hardcore with that, you know, that kind of crazy stuff. So
he was very like hesitant at first writing. He was like, I remember,
how are we
like,
gonna do this?
Yeah. He was just like, bro, you know, fuck, man, I don't know. Like, you know, I'm always up for a challenge, but I don't know.
I did tell you I'm up for the challenge. And I explicitly said that, yeah.
And I kind of told him, like, I was like, look, you know, I love metalcore, you love metalcore, I love black metal, blah 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 blah. Let's try to put them together. And Tommy was just very, just like, this was his face. He was drinking coffee and he was like, tell me more, right? Like, skeptic, like, he was, I think in his head he was going, like, sipping, going, real fuck. Just like, what a fuck.
So, what have I done? What have I joined?
Yeah, right? And, cause, and then, yeah, and so I guess with the new stuff, that's the kind of shit that we're trying to bring together and mix it together. And we've got, like, quite a bit of material. We got a lot of songs that are still in development. We have a lot of songs that are basically fully done that we could go in and just track them.
Yeah.
And like I said, we do all the pre-pro. We do the pre-pro at Tommy's house. Like, he has a little mini.
Little setup.
We program the drums and we record, and we get like a pretty decent sound. Like, it's demo.
It's very decent. Yeah.
If your sound works and, you know, and you can pull it off, like.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, we will do it probably, but for pre-productions, absolutely. You know, it's such a luxury to have that, honestly, you know, to be able to actually, just have a little home set up, you know, get a decent sound out of it. It helps enormously for writing and everything. That process, has allowed us to progress, with it, you know, probably much more than where it all kind of being done in the studio.
Mm. Faster as well. Yeah. So that's our goal, is, you know, we pre-pro the record and then we hone it, we go and practice it, we get it tight, you make micro changes in the studio when you're practicing. Mm-hmm. Some guy like Matt, our drummer, will be like, that bit sucks, let's do this, or let's go here, or something, I don't know. Or Tommy will write some fucked up riff that I'm like, I can barely play that, that's way too bullshit tech, I need to like make it this, or whatever it is, right? Or I'll write something and Tommy will be like, that's just weird. Why are you doing that? You know, this. And then, yeah, so.
That's moment, part of the evolution.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. At the moment, we're just doing that. And then we are in very early stages of talking about, you know, who we want to mix the record, how we're going to do it. Mm. So it is on the it's on the boil. And I think.
2020 release?
2020 release is highly likely that it would be.
Yeah. Sorry for putting it on you.
No. Ask away. Like, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Touch wood, you know.
Yeah, I can't, but I'm trying. Yeah.
When we first considered, I think Joel said it as a joke to me on tour. He's like, record's going to be out 2021. I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. No way is that fucking happening. But then I went through the five stages of denial and I kind of. Like, if it gets to that, all right, I can accept, you know, but yeah, fingers crossed, 2020.
It's February. You know, we've got a bunch of stuff. Mm. We got we're aiming for about 4 more songs.
Yeah.
And then we're done. And then we're ready.
The end is kind of in sight. Yeah.
Yeah. We're right on the cusp. Yeah. And it's cool. And it's one of those things where, like, we're excited, but I'm also kind of nervous because I'm like, oh, this is very different. And I showed my girlfriend last night.
Nice.
Not all the songs we haven't done all the vocals, we've done all the instruments. And I showed her, and I just sat down, put on my good speakers, cranked it up, and I listened, and I asked her, you know, what do you think? And she was just like, yeah, it sounds very different. And I was like, good or bad? She's pretty brutal. Like, she's very, very brutal. Honest, which is what I love about it, and you know, she seemed to dig it. So if she gives me a tick of approval, I'm pretty well like. Yeah. If something's shit, she's the type of person. Yeah. Oh, she's so brutal.
Tells you straight up.
Like, that's dog shit. And I'll be like, oh, and then yeah. So she's very brutal like that, which I love. And yeah, so I mean, she likes it. And 2020.
Yeah.
Well, I have faith in you, boys.
Thank you.
Because. Like, if he's gonna, like what you talked about before, if you're gonna carry on with that same formula, writing it out, sweating it out, jamming, 2020.
Yeah.
Coming in hard and heavy.
Can't beat hard.
I'm so looking forward to it. It's different sound.
Yeah.
Like, it's still.
But
like,
it's still familiar, you know?
Yeah. It's still homesick. Yeah, but it's still homesick. It's a part of the next step.
Exactly.
Yeah. Part of the journey.
I think that's exactly. That's the best way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely an evolution.
Evolution. Yeah.
Of being conscious of like, let's write a record that we want to write. Not a record that's expected of
us. Yeah, you know? Not just to fit the mold.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. The thing was, it's like, before I guess, I heard a quote once that was like, of a musician that I really loved, and he basically said that, like, one of the records he wrote because he wanted people to like his band, and then another, the record that he wrote afterwards was, he didn't give a shit if people liked his band.
Yeah.
He just wanted to write the record he wanted to write. And I guess for us, for me, and for Tommy, and for everyone, I think that's the kind of the way. Yeah. We're just like, we don't want to write a record that everyone expects us to, and so everyone likes our band. We're writing a record because we want to write.
Yeah, it's the music we will be playing. You know, we've got to enjoy it.
That's it.
And yeah, I think as long as we're proud of it, that's, you know, and stoked to play it, then that's all that matters, really, you know.
Straight up. So, shout outs or social media. If people want to get in contact with you or just follow you or throw it out in the atmosphere, fellas.
You can Facebook Homesick. I'm sure it will come up. I think it's like Homesick_HC, I think. And I think their Instagram, I mean, we're pretty shit at knowing this stuff. Yeah. Instagram is like, yeah, you know, Instagram at Homesick_HC. I should double check. So yeah, and we Facebook and Instagram is the best way to kind of like contact us or see what we're about. We're on, you know, you just can go on Spotify.
Yeah, on Spotify Homesick, as well.
And then we got Bandcamp. We just started a Twitter, but I don't know how to use it. I don't know how to use that thing, but anyway, yeah. So we got Twitter. I don't know what that is. Don't ask me, but I'm sure eventually. But yeah, it's Facebook, Spotify and Instagram are the best ways to
awesome
check us out.
Joel, Tommy, thanks immensely for coming down here and having a yarn.
Thank you, man.
We're very happy.
Loved it. It's been good.
So 2020, Homesick coming in hard.
Yep.
New material. Get after it, boys.
Yeah,
we'll do. We'll do, man.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, dude.
Man, can't wait for their new material to come out. Stinging. Come on, boys. And if you like the podcast, you like what you heard, you like what you saw, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at StreetRollingCheetah or email one word, StreetRollingCheetah@gmail.com. And we're also got a Facebook page, which is Keep Rolling It with Jake Briggs. So check it out. And I want to thank our sponsors, Permabil Australia, greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here. And they've got great assistive tech also. Righto, we'll see you on the next one.